Hej och välkomna till Astra podd. Det här är ett specialavsnitt av podden där vi får höra ett av de samtal som Astra ordnade under Helsingfors bokmässa tidigare under hösten. I det här samtalet diskuteras vilka som omfattas av feminismens vi. Och i diskussionen hör vi Kessie Holmlund, Albina Gakuro-Hipp och Jasmine Ibrahim. Samtalet är på engelska och leds av Ylva Pereira.
Hej och hjärtligt välkomna hit till Astras samtal. Vem får plats i feminismen? Vi kommer att göra det här på engelska, så jag säger bara alldeles kort först att Astra är en feministisk tidskrift som i år firar 100 år. Och vi har gett ut en antologi som heter Denna framtid är vår, om feministiska framtider, som går att köpa både hos förlaget och i Astras monter där borta. Och vi har också vårt jubileumsnummer här som är ett historiskt nummer där vi publicerar material från Astras alla 100 år med gamla texter och nya texter. But yeah, so much of from regarding history. Now we're gonna look a little bit forward and around us. We're very happy that we could invite all of you to come here. It's funny because I think that our plan was to have people not from Helsinki, and then we have all three people from Turku. So that's apparently as far as we got. But we're very happy that you're all here. And the theme of this discussion is who is given space within feminism? And that's quite a big question, but we'll see how far we will get during this talk. I'm going to introduce us just quickly. My name is Ylva Pereira, and I am ordförande. I don't remember what that's in English. Chairperson, thank you, of Astra. And I'm very happy to welcome Jessica Holmlund. You are a Master of Philosophy from Åbo Academy University, and you wrote your thesis on language, identity, and politics. Welcome. And then we have Jasmine Ibrahim, gender studies, master student from Egypt, researching the impact of migration on North African women from a post-colonial perspective in Turku. And then we have Albina Gakuro-Hipp, a PhD student in gender studies at Åbo Academy University. And you also have a master's in international relations and peace studies. Is that correct? Yay! And we're going to I would like to ask all of you, what is your relationship to feminism?
Should I start then?
Yes, and please speak very, very, very close to the mic.
Okay. Well, feminism, I actually, from the beginning, I approached it through studying it academically, and it gave me a space for personal growth and intellectual growth. But this only went as far as at one point when I also realized and accepted myself as transgender, I realized that theory couldn't do anything for me anymore. Rather the opposite, the theory I learned was rather stigmatizing my own identity. So after that, I kind of gave it away. I kind of got past feminism in some sense. Because of just like survival. But later on, it's present in all the ways I do academic work, and I still have a strong relation to it. But it's not always important for me to identify as feminist necessarily, even though the term would apply in many ways, I guess.
Ever since I was growing up, I've affiliated as a feminist.
Is this better?
Okay. I've identified as a feminist all my life, like through going to different countries and studying in different places. It is that part of my identity that I've continuously hung on to. It started from just learning about theories to the point where I realized that I can have a voice and I can use my identity to stand up for others as well as myself and to fight for different voices of different backgrounds.
My way into feminism was actually in a little bit of a long way, because I come from the hard sciences. And then what happened was, when we're doing peace research and I was writing my master's, it became so apparently clear that the women's voices were missing in the negotiation table and in the peace process, you know, and yet there were part and partial, there were 50% of victims, or the 50% where the conflict was on their bodies. So what happened is I asked myself, where are the women? And from then, I then went into United Nations charters and all these things, came across Resolution 1325. And then I came across the peacekeeping, the Blue Berets from Pakistan. It was so solely run and organized by women who were sent to Liberia. And for me, that was when I started now asking the question, like, why? When we talk of crisis management and emergency refugee centers and stuff, why does the United Nations use the males or the army as the Blue Beret? And so I kept on going and also training a few of the Blue Berets. And I then realized that there was no gender in it. There was nothing, you know. It's like it was so militarized that the women were silenced. They were literally being used as objects or like collateral damage, you know. And also when you look at the conflict studies and what they define as what is a genocide, what is a war, what is an internal war, those definitions, they use the number of bodies by the number of bodies. So for example, if you talk of a genocide, you should have over 1,500 deaths. But they're very specific. When you go into the just war theory, you see it's actually of combatants. So then again, you could see the women and the children are not included in this. So that's when I started finding out and asking myself a few other questions. And this is why I'm doing a research on that in the gender department. Yeah.
Thank you so much. And that leads us into what I wanted to discuss with you now, because when we talk about feminism, it's quite easy to think about it as a sort of movement, a closed movement in its own, debating specific questions. But for example, what you bring up now with how gender is not taken into account when we talk about war and conflict, there is like a field that's not very typical for a lot of feminists here in Finland to be interested in. We are more used to speaking about wages and healthcare and other things that's also important, but that we maybe not may realize that it's this problem with gender inequality is much, much more wider than that. So what I wanted to ask you next is, what do you think is missing in feminist debate today, and what do you think should be discussed more?
Well, there's so many topics in there, so I'm uncertain what exactly I would pick up and say, like, we need to discuss this. But I think there is rather a sort of black and white thinking in how we look on questions within feminism, like what kind of is brought in there. And of course, there's so many islands when it comes to feminism also. So of course, but in general, there is this just the idea of which topics are important to us. And there, for example, just the thing that how, for example, sexual harassment of men were seen as something that was like a threat, like something that didn't belong to the Me Too campaign. I still think that sort of topic, for example, could have fitted in under like misogynist violence, female bosses harassing male employees can also be seen as like a power relation that is also important to us. that we're kind of bad at fighting at all fronts just because we take a certain body and think that it's a certain experience belongs to it and a certain oppression or a certain privilege is attached to that. And we kind of mark people before they say things and think that, you know, it just turns kind of black and white in that sense and kind of blinds us from topics that I think would be important because we have kind of already marked out what we're interested in.
I guess for me, which motivated me to write my thesis about women who don't have citizenship in Finland, I think that these women, we need to give more representation to. We often view them as just documents or applications to fill out and hand off to the other person. And I know that this is like a very specific example, but it could be applied to different aspects of feminism and equality and social justice. But specifically for me, I think that more light should be shed on the women that don't get representation, that only are looked at from an institutional level, but not as individuals, as complex emotional individuals.
First, I have to apologize. I may look a little bit of a funny, my face. I woke up today and I was scared when I looked at the mirror. So I hope I'm not terrorizing you as I was scared. I just had an allergic reaction, but it's under medication. So what I think is missing in the feminist debate today, I will talk on my viewpoint or in my perspective in this embodied body of a black woman and the meanings it creates in whatever space it goes into. And therefore, through that perspective, I would say that what is really kind of missing in the feminist debate today is an intersectional approach to the way it's written, you know, of the audiences. So, I mean, we all kind of understand what intersectionality is. So we're looking at the different discriminations and how they come to being and how they are affecting a particular person or a particular body. And therefore, this is the what I see is missing in the debate, the acknowledgement of the silent or the background thinking when feminism is the concept of feminism is being debated is that we are all standing at very different standpoints, different perspectives, and therefore there should also be spaces and places that we're at, everybody's allowed to give a voice and no voices over the other.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think this goes sort of hand in hand with what you were after, that the problem in feminism might be that we assume who is the feminist subject. And that is very often a white cis woman. And then when we talk about intersectionality, in my experience, it's usually that we still have the same norm, but then we think, oh yes, let's include other people as well. But let's not move away from this norm that we have established. But what do you think could be a way forward from this sort of thinking? How could we try to make the movement not look as, I don't know, I'm not saying you should solve this problem, because I think the problem lies mainly within white feminists such as myself. But I'm still curious about what kind of strategies you think could be used in order to work for like a better visibility, better taking into account all the bodies that are affected by patriarchy in society today.
I think we have to somehow. But the interesting thing is that this question is, this inclusion-exclusion question is always kind of on top of the pack always when you talk with academic feminists or like, you know, the people I'm surrounded with in general are always concerned with this. But I always sometimes think that here we're constructing an idea of us that can include or exclude people. Maybe we are excluded. Maybe it happens someplace else. I know it's like... Just this idea, there's something wrong with that question in itself, that it kind of reinforces the hierarchy we want to get rid of. And there I think we need to rather just be okay with that there is lots of different feminisms and people will do it in their own way. And also rather than that whoever that is, should exclude people, we should rather just let people use feminism as they wish to. Because if we look at all the problems that been, like all the kind of exclusionary practices we had to like eat up afterwards, like trans women, women of color, like gay rights, etc., and things that been excluded from the, it's been actually that the problem kind of boils down to wanting to like rigid definitions. And yeah, I just think we need to let people, because this also goes hand in hand with having a feminism, like we should rather ask like what should feminists do, and not what is feminism. And there, only the people kind of in their particular situations can tell what they need and what needs to be done. So there we just need to be more accepting, I think, for things we don't necessarily understand. For somebody, feminism is not having to be feminine. For somebody else, it's to get to be allowed to be feminine. For somebody, it's about having kids. For somebody, not being forced to have kids, etc. So they would just have to be kind of more, yeah, open to that, I think, and not try to be in control of like my feminism and invite everybody to our party. Like,
I think that time and time again, I find that it's very important to break down the dualistic thinking, like you were saying, about how we see feminism and how we see social justice in general. It doesn't have to be either I'm a feminist or I'm not. There are so many different perspectives and theories and different definitions of feminism, I think, that we can still employ and we can identify with. Another thing I think is important, and specifically within the Finnish context, I think that it's very important to be a continuous vocal voice against oppression of other people, whether you are experiencing it firsthand or are seeing it happen to people around you. I definitely, having been here only 1 year, I have had to learn to stand up in different situations for other people as well as for myself, and to break the silence. And I think that we're still learning that as we go. But it has definitely been the most practical thing that I've done as a feminist, that I can say it works every time.
Well, this is something I'm still debating on and looking at and also researching on. So that's a side other than my thesis. But the interesting thing, when I use my other skills that I have acquired and my other knowledges from other fields, because feminism is also interdisciplinary. So the goodness is that it allows other disciplines to come in and give ideas in order to create tools to deal with the other little issues that feminist movement or the debate and the concept of it is. And I'm always stuck on the angle of decolonial and post-colonial, because at that point and that concept, using those concepts, we actually get to the point of defining who man is. And by defining who man is and who is defined as man, then we are able to deconstruct the power relations, who set the definitions, you know. So when we talk of it, if you look at it in a decolonial perspective, you kind of then say, well, man is a heteronormative white male, and that's the definition of man. And therefore, then what happens to the other masculinities? Then we also then end up finding that there's a hegemony of masculinities. And also, you can then see there's also some power relations. So all these things is, I'm still debating also, so I can't really give an answer, but I'm kind of finding more sense by looking through the prism of decolonial and postcolonial, and by starting to ask myself and see what, when man was being defined, what was the mindset of the person in mind? You know, when you look at what Herodotus, now we go to the dead old philosophers, but you know, when he was writing about man, who was he defining? Of course, he was using his perspective, his worldview. So he was white. So that was what he was looking at. And then when we look at now, if we talk of post-colonial, what made people like me be defined as primitive or subhuman? Or it's also based on that kind of. So you also then end up finding yourself going into anthropology, and you know, and then you look at Margaret Mead and how did she understand these people? And you can go like, okay, she was using a Western perspective, and then there you can also see the power relations. So again, so it's like it's a rabbit hole that is a very interesting rabbit hole to be in. A little bit confusing, though.
Yeah, that's a very good summary, I would say. But I like what I think. What you have in common is that your empathy is on doing. That feminism has to be a practice. It's something that we do, and doing it is much more interesting and much more effective than defining what it should be and shouldn't be. So I think that's at least something that we can take with us from this. And also, I like what you said about having to be. Like wherever you are, sort of, whatever you're studying, you can have, like, there is a possibility or maybe a responsibility to see who has power here and who gets to speak and why and who is not allowed to speak in this scenario. So I think that's very, there we already have a lot of very practical tools to take with us. But we have a few minutes left. Does anybody of you have anything else you would like to say? This went really, really fast, but we can have like a round if you have some finishing statements.
I think an important thing that Albina brought up was just the thing of being like interdisciplinary academically, and when it comes to roots movements, there's just so many things going on, and I don't think necessarily all feminists has to go well get along with each other. Why do we have to? I mean, we have different sort of like, we live different situations, we have different topics that are interesting to us. So I think the question of we and what is feminism, it becomes most important when you're in a situation where you actually are holding like the definition in your hands, like when you're running a paper like Astra and you wonder what sort of things should we publish here and so on. And there also just being in tune with being open for things that we maybe don't get, because people are excluded because we don't get them. Trans women were seen as like appropriating like some sort of misogynist view of women, blah, 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 and were completely excluded. And people view these things different today. But it's just because we don't get it, we completely just... And maybe we don't always have to have an opinion on everything right away. I think that's something today when lots of feminism is going on, like on social media, maybe we just don't need a done manifest and like tags for everything. Just slow down a bit. That's my my last words today.
Thank you.
I think that what I would say is that as a feminist, I've learned that it's sometimes okay not to look for someone else to give me the instructions on how to be a right or wrong feminist. I think it's sometimes okay to look within my own experience, and of course it's very helpful to see other people's experience, but that it's okay to define how I see feminism and how I see my own activism.
Well, again, as I said, well, how I see my feminism is a life of how I in this body have to relate with other bodies in this life. So it's a, as again I said, interdisciplinary and using all the tools you have. So I always bring out my perspective and my worldview, because I understand and I'm clear that everybody has a different worldview and a different embodiment and different life experiences, and therefore then I try to use an intersectional approach when I'm addressing people or even looking at things, you know. In that way, then I can minimize or try to minimize any silencing, any marginalization, you know, because then you give them also voices, the subaltern voices, you know, as they, many people say. So we are, in a way, we are all subalterns in our own worldviews and our own perspectives. And therefore, let us hear each other's voices.
Thank you. Excellent ways to end. Thank you so much for coming.